You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out JMBullion.com today. Today's guest is author and public speaker John Chambers of Course Corrections Consulting. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about yourself since it's your first time on the show.
Oh, boy, where to begin? You know, actually, in my new book, Trump and the Resurrection of America, I've written sort of an open introduction letter, and I cover the ground there. But short and sweet, I've been in what one might call the freedom movement for the past 20-some-odd years. And, where do I begin? Prior to that, well, during that stint, I was a financial advisor for about a dozen years. I had six offices in three states and resigned and retired from that in 2008 and did some consulting and actually was a radio talk show host, conservative talk radio. And then I formed the Save America Foundation, which was a 501c4 not-for-profit, whose mission statement was to see that our elected officials reinstate, protect, defend, and adhere to the Constitution. And so, you know, I did some public speaking. I've spoken in about 30, 40 cities, maybe six states and three countries. Had the opportunity and still do to work with lots of different people. G. Edward Griffin, Judge Napolitano, Ron Paul, Stuart Rhodes, just a lot of great people, some known, some unknown, throughout the freedom movement, if you want to call it that. And that's sort of a snapshot, if you will. And then I've written six books over the past, I'd say, 3 or 4 years while I was over in Asia and back here now in the U.S.
And your most recent book is called Trump and the Resurrection of America. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. This book, actually, to talk about this book, I have to go backwards just a little bit. I was in Thailand. I have a retirement visa there, and I spend time there. And when Trump came down the escalator in June of 2015, I think it was, right? I was watching it closely because I'm a New Yorker, and I'm, you know, Trump is no stranger to us. And I figured, well, here comes Trump again, get a little bit of the headlight and further his brand. I wasn't really taking him very seriously, but I was watching. And it didn't take too long for me to realize that Trump was on to something as he slowly slayed every one of his opponents for the GOP nomination. And so I began writing a book in real time, analyzing the Trump phenomenon, because it's never occurred in history what we've witnessed recently. And why I was so inspired was because he was kind of going where no man had gone before and having fun doing it. And he was raising some of the issues and the non-politically correct taboo issues that I was thrilled to hear. So I felt like, you know, people on my side of the fence, if you will, had a much bigger voice now. And the things we've been saying for 10, 15 years and being called conspiracy theorists and lunatics for became common knowledge. So I looked at it as time plus Trump has equaled a much more engaged and informed electorate. But back to your question. So I wrote the book, What One Man Can Do, No Trump, No Hope. And it was an analyzation of the phenomenon that was occurring. And so then I decided to come back to the States. I'd been gone the better part of the past 5 years and working very closely with some folks perhaps we'll talk about later. And I saw this book, Trump and the Resurrection of America, was written while in the state of Ohio and done in a relatively short period of time, because typically – for me, books take months and months and months of of work and research, but I knew my subject matter. I had already written 300 blogs on my blog site, johnmichaelchambers.com. So I had a lot of material to go into. And I wrote the book, I would say, in a matter of 6 or 8 weeks from shortly after the election till the beginning of January. And then the publisher got it out in April. And so now I'm doing a speaking tour around the country, promoting the book and doing a talk based on the contents of the book. In fact, I'm in Stuart, Florida at this present moment.
Oh, and that's not too far for me. One of the chapters in your book is called The Shadow Government, and various organizations like the CFR, the Bilderberg Group, they attempt to override the wishes of we the people through nefarious coalitions. One of the big players in the shadow government is George Soros. And Soros is a co-investor with Jared Kushner in the real estate finance firm Cadre. Does that concern you?
I haven't looked into it extensively. On the surface, of course, it concerns me. But, you know, one could raise the same questions about some of the folks from Goldman Sachs in there and on and on. Look, the broad summary from my perspective is the landmines were laid by the previous administration to trip up Trump, if you will. Trump perhaps has brought in some people, some he may realize, keep your enemies close, and some he may not realize. But I think a great concern beyond the son-in-law is the deep state. But he's been infiltrated significantly. And the Jared issue, I haven't followed very closely because it's relatively recently been revealed, so to speak. And I've been on the road, you know, 15, 20 cities in the last 6 weeks. But, you know, should all that connect up? And I also understand he owns one of the buildings with a company that produces the RFID chips. And, you know, the plot thickens on this guy. And the same with Ivanka. I was very impressed with Ivanka during the campaign. I mean, extraordinarily impressed. And now we're starting to hear some other things. I think Trump is his own man. And I think he's playing three-dimensional chess with the rest of the world. And I say that only because he did that from day one in the campaign. And a lot of the folks that supported Trump, like myself, said, wow, why did he say that? Or why did he choose that person? Or what is he doing? And then we've come to find out a week later, haha, gotcha. He was three steps ahead of everybody on it. And I'm hoping that may be the case with some of the things we see unfolding before us. That's a long-winded answer, but the truth is I haven't researched the Jared issue enough yet to comment on it, and that was not known to us all, at least to me, when I wrote the book, so it didn't make it into the book.
You've got a chapter called Money and the Federal Reserve. Can you talk to us about that one?
Yeah, sure. I think most of your listeners and most people that are awake now realize, of course, that the Federal Reserve is a private for-profit banking cartel, and the authority on that body of work, some might say it's Ron Paul. I would say it's G. Edward Griffin, and I would say Ron Paul was the champion trying to get rid of them, whereas Griffin tried to heavily exposed it. But look, they're a for-profit bank, and they've succeeded to devalue our currency by over 95% since its inception. And although the Federal Reserve is legal, thanks to Congress back in that day and President Woodrow Wilson signing it into law, it is in fact unconstitutional. And because the Constitution states that only Congress shall have the power to regulate and issue the control of our money, and that's a paraphrase from the Constitution, but that's essentially what it says. And we gave that power away to a group of private international bankers in 1913 through the Federal Reserve Act. And so, everything's about the money and the petrodollar, et cetera. So it's not a small issue. It's not getting the big attention it got 10 years ago, thanks to people like Judge Napolitano and others, and certainly Ron Paul. But it's still the same big elephant in the room that it's always been. And I recall a tweet from Trump during the campaign phase where he said something to the effect that the Federal Reserve does need to be looked into. And I understand Rand Paul is still taking the torch over from his father. But you know, and this is just speculation, but you know, the last person that tried to get rid of the Federal Reserve ended up dead in Dallas, and his name was John F. Kennedy. Now, there's no fact, it can't be proven, that that connected up to his assassination, but Executive Order 11110 is eye-opening, and that can be found even on Wikipedia these days, where President Kennedy was trying to return silver in addition to gold, which was already backing the dollar, trying to return silver to back it in an executive order and a move to limit the powers of the Federal Reserve. Some say that may have led to the tragic events in Dallas.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
In the Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. Everett and Courtney Carl have survived the Seven Seal Judgments, which devastated the planet. But have their efforts to stay alive been in vain? The next series of judgments to fall upon the earth are known as the Seven Trumpets. Within this series of cataclysms is the earth's collision with a giant asteroid known as Wormwood. The comet will poison much of the planet's fresh water supplies, making survival nearly impossible. With each subsequent trumpet judgment, their odds of living grow slimmer. If Everett and Courtney are to survive, they'll need perseverance, faith, and a great outpouring of providence from the Almighty. Buy your copy of The Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.
During Obama's presidency, the various quantitative easing programs and monetary creation programs, we doubled the M2 money supply. It was right around $7 trillion when Obama came in, and I think it's right around 14 right now. But we didn't see a whole lot of inflation during that 8-year period. But do we have all that money? Do you think that's all sitting on the sidelines right now? And do you think that with this sort of resurgence of confidence that's come with President Trump, do you think that's going to start heating up? And do you think that we could see some serious inflation and that Trump might be blamed for the inflation that's created because he's bringing back the confidence that's simply putting that extra $7 trillion that was printed under Obama? And that starts going to work and starts gaining velocity. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. When you look at the past, you know, just to learn from it, the playbook of how they operate, you know, false flags, problem, reaction, solution, Hegelian dialectic type stuff, it would not surprise me one single bit that at a strategic moment during Trump's maneuvers to restore, you know, sound economic and monetary policy, I would say that they'll collapse it on him and blame it on him. And that is a way to splinter the movement, because a lot of people that voted for Trump didn't necessarily like Trump, but they came into the fold because they certainly didn't want Hillary Clinton. And so those would be the easiest people that would walk away once their pocketbooks get hit and they blame it on Trump. Let's sure hope this doesn't happen, but I think it's highly probable. Furthermore, I'm going to go back to history again, and Charles A. Lindbergh Sr. was a congressman in 1913, and shortly after the Federal Reserve Act was enacted into law, he stated that from now on, all depressions and recessions will be scientifically created. And I think to a large extent that is true. It certainly happened in 2008. And I think the mess that caused 2008 has been significant. Those actions have been, you know, 1,000 times worse, and the next collapse will be bigger. But I do think they'll do it at a strategic moment and blame it on Trump. To me, that seems like possibly a foregone conclusion. Let's hope not. But I look, as a side note, I think that and back to your point of inflation, but I think that even if they, and they being the shadow government, which is defined pretty extensively in the book, I think that they will, even if they do not pull the string and collapse it, it's going to collapse anyway, because, you know, the debt is unsustainable. The bonds are about to implode. The PE ratios are out of whack. It's a completely rigged and controlled economy. And it's with Trump's weak dollar policy, which is 20 years too late, but thank goodness he's moving. It's the first time we've had a weak dollar president since Clinton. And we've got rising interest rates, perhaps first time in 20 years. And rising interest rates, as you know, run in 20-some-odd-year cycles. So it's a major game changer right now. And based on that, to your point of inflation, I do believe, and people have been talking about it, and it's been significant inflation has been relatively under control. But I think that that game is over, and it's a game changer, and we're going to start to see big inflation a bit down the road.
And it seemed like almost immediately after the election, housing in my neck of the woods really took a spike, and things were that had sat on the market for 6 or 9 months were now selling in 4 to 6 weeks of being listed, and we're starting to see the prices climb. Do you think we're heading into another housing bubble, or do you think that this is just kind of a natural correction from the slump of people thinking that, well, we're finally not under a socialist government anymore?
I think it's the latter, what you just stated. I think just the suppressed silent majority of us for 8 years, and all truth being said, last 16 years, but we'll certainly go to the last 8, stifled a lot. And with Trump, there was a resurrection of confidence and the spirit being lifted. And, temporarily that can move markets, and certainly in regional areas. But I think the stock market, and I'm not an economist, but I think the stock market, with the environment we're heading in now, and I'm not talking about tomorrow morning. I'm just talking about, this new trend that we're in with rising interest rates and a weak dollar policy and all the other things that Trump is going to be doing, deconstructing the globalist plan, doesn't come without consequences. And I think that the stock market is at best Vegas money for where we're heading. And although Trump's policies will return manufacturing here and jobs, et cetera, but prices will go up for a lot of different reasons. And but I think real estate's going to be a gamble. And of course, mortgages will be through the roof in terms of the interest rates. And when we have the market corrections, we're going to have a 2008 on steroids. Real estate in the long run is always a good thing, but I think the bonds are going to implode, obviously, because of the inverse relationship to rising rates. Right now, this is the calm before the storm. The Dow's at 20,000, rah, rah, bonds have been paying. Yeah, I get it. But really, people are partying on the deck of the Titanic right now. That's what's happening. The time for action, in my opinion, is now. And I'm no longer a financial advisor. I don't sell investments. I don't sell insurance or precious metals. I don't manage money for a fee. But, I've been on the other side of that fence for many years. And, I try and stay in informed like you do and everyone else. And I think the writing is on the wall. Even Trump himself said in an interview in 2016 with the Washington Post, he said, get ready for a very, very massive recession. And most economists the world over are in agreement with that right now. So, they can control it. And then when they're ready to implode it, they will. That's the way I see it unfolding.
And you said 2008 on steroids. We had some things that we could do, of course, and we did them. We took the interest rates to zero. We doubled the money supply. Can we not do that again? Can we not? Well, I guess we're already almost at zero, so we wouldn't have that option unless interest rates go up and then we can cut them back. But can we double the M2 money supply again? Can we take it to 28 trillion? Will there still be confidence in the dollar if we do that?
My opinion, no. And Yellen's already raised rates twice, the Federal Reserve chairwoman, since the nomination and the election. She signaled to raise rates a couple more times this year, 3 or 4 times next year, and so on in 2019. We're not going back down. We're going to go up. And the piper's going to be paid, and the implosion's going to happen under Trump's watch. How Trump handles it is the never-ending media narrative battle that he faces, and so I think you can't solve the debt problem by creating more debt. It just doesn't work. Our time is up. And that's the way I see it. I see, you know, you have a $20 trillion federal debt, just about $20 trillion. You've got the unfunded liabilities, and the other debt combined is about $225 trillion. It's unsustainable. And so I think the policies, I'm supportive of what I know of Trump's tax plan. I'm supportive of a weak dollar policy. I'm supportive of the rising interest rate environment right now. But all of these things, because of the excesses of the last couple of decades, are going to manifest under Trump's watch. And like you said earlier on, that's a no-brainer for them to just blame it all on Trump. And so, but I think Trump knows this. He plays three-dimensional chess with the world, and I believe that and hopeful that he's got a PR campaign and an education campaign to change the narrative more towards the truth. But time will tell.
What do you think this looks like when we have the collapse that you're talking about? What's that going to be like for the man on the street? And can you talk to us in terms of what you think unemployment would be like, inflation rates, what would happen to housing? Just paint us a picture of what you think that looks like.
Well, the best thing to do is just go back to 2008, because that's relatively recent history. The CDOs and the CMOs, the collateralized debt obligations, collateralized mortgage obligations, this is what caused the big problem, in part. And so their solution was to just inject more capital and bail out who they chose to bail out. And the best movie that I've seen to date to illustrate what really went on behind the scenes, how it was orchestrated, who was to be saved. The people on the street is collateral damage. They could care less. In fact, they reap the harvest. It's a party. They're high-fiving behind the scenes. But the movie The Big Short with Steve Carell and Brad Pitt and some other big names, I think was a really good way to express what occurred. And what occurred then, we've been doing, as you stated, with $7 trillion and all the policies that we've had, debt on top of debt, and then redistributing our wealth, and then the TPP, which Trump is getting rid of. But all of these things is why I believe it'll be worse than last time, because the problem is worse. And so all we have to do is look back to 2008. Well, what happened? Well, people lost 30, 40, 50, 60% of their portfolio. Took about 3 or 4 years for it to respectably climb back, in 10 years, you know, almost 10 years fully. But, you know, what you can expect for the average man, those with investable assets will lose a fortune, and they'll have to wait time, you know. People will lose their homes. People that carrying debt will get destroyed. People with adjustable rates, credit card banks will take it to the ceiling. You read the contracts, they can take your interest rates as high as they want. There's certain guidelines, I'm sure, but what's going to happen is people that have debt are going to suffer significantly, because they're not going to be able to carry it any longer with the rising interest rates. People will lose homes. It's just another shift, just like we saw in 08, except it'll be worse because the debt and the problem now is worse. Now, if they want to just keep a rigged system, keep a debt-based monetary system for the world, I guess they can do this every 10 years to us. I mean, who knows? But I think this is going to be different, because Trump is trying to deconstruct decades of the ruling elite and the globalist policies. This is a game changer. We know what the plan was prior to Trump arriving, you know, to use China to become a regional currency and then a global currency, and all the pieces are in place for that. But now with Trump, the candidate that was not supposed to become president, you know, the person that wasn't supposed to happen, did happen. And so I don't think anyone knows how it's going to play out right now. But I will say that, to answer your question specifically, people with debt are going to be in serious trouble, and people with assets, unless they take the proper moves now, not later, they're going to lose their money, and they're going to lose a lot of it. And I think you just go back to 2008, I think it'll be significantly worse than that. That's just my opinion. But I'm not alone. Gerald Celente out of New York, all economists say that. Harry Dent out of Tampa says it. Mark Faber out of Europe says it. Max Kaiser, Peter Schiff, Jim Rogers, the long list of people. They've not always been right, but for one time they're all agreeing a massive correction is coming. I think it becomes and then you throw in the reason it'll also be worse is we're a much more divisive nation now by design, and the deep pockets of Soros, Clintons, and others are creating these groups we see on the streets, and we're gonna have a big mess. I'm not a pessimist. I'm more of a realist, but recent history, current stats and facts, it's gonna get messy.
The folks in Venezuela are really living through just hell right now. The average Venezuelan, I think, has lost 19 pounds in the past year. I think the year before, I think it was 18 pounds. So you're talking about a food crisis in a country that just barely has a functioning currency. They've redone the currency last year, and it's just they just keep doing more of the same. And it's riots in the streets. It's criminal gangs are taking over, and the government's completely powerless to do anything about it. Do you think that level of a collapse is off the table for America, or do you think we could see something like that in this country?
Well, we've had something pretty significant back in the early 1900s, but I wouldn't take anything off the table, including EMP attacks and God knows what else. But I don't think that we will end up as bad as Venezuela. I just don't think so. At least not with Trump in office. And I'm not saying he's got all the solutions and he's the hero of heroes, but I have a lot more confidence with him than I do his two predecessors. And I believe that. Extraordinary times are going to require extraordinary measures. And in the book, there was a section contributed by a good friend of mine, Dr. Richard Davis, where he had written a letter to Trump as well as a grid of what needs to be done to resurrect America. Again, it's in the book, but Trump needs at some point to do some very radical things if he's in fact going to be able to deliver his campaign promises and if he's in fact going to resurrect America. They're radical, but they're legal and they're constitutional, and they're spelled out in the book. But it could get like Venezuela or Zimbabwe or any other horrific situation that's happened over the years, but I don't think it will. But I think that there's some long, dark days ahead before we can get the sun to shine again. Because right now it's really for all the marbles. This is the first time, in my opinion, I think Brexit and then Trump were the very first time in my lifetime that the ruling elite have a formidable challenge and something they couldn't control, didn't control, lost control. And I think the globalists are trembling in their shorts right now. But they're not willing to just let it all go, the Rothschild dynasties, if you will, and their henchmen like Soros and everybody else, David Brock, Media Matters, it goes on and on. This is the battle of battles, and in my opinion, you're never going to find another guy like Trump again. This is a once in a lifetime occurrence. If we don't win this battle, it's over. And I know that sounds dramatic, but all your listeners have to do is learn about agenda, not just Agenda 21. Everyone knows about that, but United Nations Agenda 2030. They have nothing more in mind than complete global governance tyranny and sovereignless nations. And that's how close we came. It started a long time ago. Clinton accelerated it. Bush put it on steroids and Obama almost finished it off, leaving one last nail for Hillary Clinton, who was supposed to get elected, and then nail it shut. And now we have a brief breath in eternity here during Trump's reign, if he can stay alive, to reverse this. It's going to be nasty. It's just going to be nasty. And unthinkable things that will tower 9/11 are quite probable. And that's the times we're living in. And it's not to scare people. You know, I've done a lot of research. I've read things. I've been at this for a while. I'm in good company with a lot of smart people that would echo these sentiments. People need to prepare. They need to prepare spiritually for those of faith. They need to prepare economically for those with assets. They need to surround themselves with like-minded people who understand the times. There's a long checklist of things that people can and should be doing, because there's no way that we're going to – there's no guarantee we're going to resurrect America. And if we do, it's not going to come without pain, suffering, and consequences. No question about it, in my opinion.
That's the end of the first half of my interview with John Chambers. Tune in next week for the rest of the show. Ready-Made Resources has a limited number of PVS 30 night vision scopes for $4,700. These are the top-of-the-line night vision scopes used by the U.S. military, which normally sell for over $11,000. Turn your 12-hour rifle into a 24-hour rifle. Visit Ready-Made Resources to get your PVS 30 today.